Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
Next item, 2025-3002, is an item that's gone before the Planning Board. They have a recommendation for you to allow miniature goats within residential zoning districts here in the city. Anyone in the audience wish to comment on that particular item? I'll be happy to comment on this particular item.
Move with the consent.
It will, in my opinion, open up a request for other livestock type animals to come into the city. Cities are, by definition, different creatures than counties and rural areas.
I did think it was kind of funny. Mike Cusack, just move it to consent.
Move it to consent.
No, sir, this is not a consent item. This is going to be some controversy. You don't get off that easily. I thought it was funny. Ed Spears, anyway, city manager for the city of Milton, as they were considering the prospect of allowing miniature goats, Nigerian miniature goats, in the city of Milton. Just two. And here's why. You had a family that moved into Milton, and apparently they claimed they were told by their leasing agent that they could have goats in the city, or by the person they bought the house from, or whatever. I think it's a buy. Anyway. And turns out that's not true. You can't have goats in the city. And so now they've come to city council to ask for an exemption. Can you please change the law so that we can keep our pets? Which is an understandable thing for somebody to ask. And Ed Spears?
I understand the love and affection of these animals and the family and the bond that they formed. We're not responsible for the leasing agent or the realtor not providing that information that they were not allowed in this, and in my opinion, it's going to open up future requests for different animals. That's my opinion.
The old billy goat slope, the slippery slope of future other animals being allowed into the city of Milton if you allow this. I mean, sure, you know, we all know that baby miniature goats are cuddly and cute and wonderful and loving and affectionate. Don't ask me how I know. Joe Cook, but the troubles come. If you allow them, you got to allow others, right? Joe Cook, who is the Public Works Director.
It's going to open up a can of worms because these animals do poop, pee, and when they do, it kills the grass. So we're going to have a nightmare trying to police this thing.
The poop and pee apocalypse that Joe Cook is worried is going to come to the city of Milton.
They're going to get out. They're going to spread to other yards. They're going to stick their head through the fence and eat the flowers from the folks' next door, and it's going to be a bunch of complaints. I've had animals all my life, big ones, little ones, all sizes, but I live in the country. And if you want animals, that's where you should live. It's in the country, not in the city.
So 4371620, pretend you're a city council member. What do you vote on this? Do you allow the one family with their two highly domesticated, no poop slinging baby miniature goats to live in the city, or do you not allow it? Do you make an exemption or not make it? That was in the work session before the meeting. Then they come back to the regular meeting and have the real conversation. Mike Cusack.
You know, his staff has stated that they don't want to, you know, think it's going to, you know, roll into other livestock, but that's not what this ordinance is. It's only for miniature goats only. So I make a motion to approve it.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. A motion by Councilman Cusack and a second from Councilman Lee.
All right, so two who are willing anyway, Councilman Lee and Councilman Cusack, who are willing to allow this. They say no slippery slope. I mean, you know, you can allow just the baby miniature goats and then no nothing else. I guess it's technically just miniature goats, not baby. I think of them as baby. Anyway, you can allow the miniature goats and draw the line right there. It was really hard to hear this woman's name. I think she said it was Stay Shilladuke. And if I said it wrong, I apologize. Anyway, she had an opinion.
So does that mean somebody can come and ask y'all about a miniature pony, a miniature cow? I'm very familiar with all those animals. So what's the difference between a miniature goat and a miniature pony?
Miniature ostrich.
And a miniature cow.
Well, all of that would have to be discussed by the planning board first. But on first impression, I would say size. There's got to be a difference in the size, right?
They're all about the same size. You can
miniature goat and a miniature pony?
Oh, yeah, they're all the different, they're coming out smaller and smaller. Oh, and then you've got the pigs and stuff, so.
Miniature baboon, miniature emu. You can breed anything small. I mean, you just take the small ones and breed them, and you get smaller ones, right?
Miniature kangaroo,
miniature elephant. I mean, you could have anything.
I would just ask that y'all think about that. I'm very familiar with goats. We have dwarf goats and outside of the area. Yes. And they are cute and everything, but they do make a mess. And the smell that can come from them, is your ordinance going to say you can only have like one or two? Or is there going to...
Only two.
Only two. All right. I would prefer you not do it, but... I understand where those people are coming from.
Yeah, and look, your heart does feel for these folks who came into the city with their miniature goats and got told they could have them, and they find out they can't have them. But does that mean that the city needs to rewrite its land development rules for this family? Ashley Fretwell, city councilwoman.
No, we've got pit bulls. We've got cats that'll scratch your eyes out. I understand that, but a goat is considered livestock. Livestock is not permitted within the city limits. And I feel like we need to stick to this ordinance so it doesn't become a bigger problem. And the citizens just need to make sure that they are aware of things prior to moving in city limits.
You want to live in the city, you give up your goat. You want to have a goat, you live in the country. It's that. We're not doing the Beverly Hillbillies in downtown Milton. That's kind of the con position, right? We'll come back to this in a second. John, you're chuckling, but like, doesn't this seem like the most Milton of all possible questions?
Yes.
It's wonderful. Oh my goodness. All right, John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Brought to you by Frontier Motors, the only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. That's Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. Still rolling accident-free right now. Looks like if you are on I-10 eastbound, just going past the Highway 29 exit headed toward I-110 or eastbound on 10, going to see about a 5 to 7 minute delay there, but traffic is moving just very slowly. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. The text we're getting in are kind of funny. 437-1620 says, somebody says a miniature cassowary. I don't know what that is. It would be awesome. Somebody else says, isn't all of Milton Beverly Hillbillies anyway? No. Somebody says those people should sue the real estate person or company that sold them the house that promised the one thing that was incorrect. Failure to do due diligence. That's true. Make no exemption because then I want to have a miniature pony in my front yard. And somebody else says, look, if the goats can clearly articulate to me that they identify as dogs, I would have to vote yes.
Oh, my goodness. That is awesome.
Trans species Nigerian miniature goats up next on the agenda. Okay, back to the conversation. Marilyn Farrow, City Councilwoman Marilyn Farrow.
I'm a strong believer in property rights, as you know. But what about the property rights of citizens who moved here with the ordinances we already had in place?
Right. The people who believe the ordinances apply to them and have houses, and they expect a certain life quality that does not include goat stink. Goat poop or slippery slope goats. But she goes on.
The only way that I would even consider voting in approval of the ordinance would be if there were a minimum lot size stipulated. Because goats have rights too. They have rights to have room to move around.
Wait, they have.
Because goats have rights too.
Oh, she didn't say that.
She did. Goats have rights too. Yeah. Now,
freedom of speech.
I think Marilyn Farrow is sort of on the right goat path here, but she's not quite getting the scenario because if you specify a minimum lot size, the real question is not the size of the lot, the real question is the size of the goat. Because if you have a goat that's, you know, say 13 inches at the shoulder, it might not need a full acre or half acre. It can get by. It's goat shoulder height to lot size ratio is what you need to be looking at putting in your law. You know, that's the that's the real golden number. Sorry, I went too far on the puns. But anyway, goats have rights too. Larry McKee.
Yes, goats have rights too. I really like that statement. But so do neighborhoods. And my question to everybody at the council here, do you want goats next door to you?
Because that's what you're allowing if you do this. Anybody anywhere could get two goats and put them on their property next to you.
The way this is written, it's not asking for anybody's permission. Once you approve this, I could have goats next door to me, and so could all of you, because there wouldn't be asking your permission for it anymore, because that's not what this says. Then it's going to put it back to the homeowners associations, which we all love, I'm sure, to make that decision for you.
I mean, who knows but that Oprah might come to town and be like, two goats for you, two goats for you, two goats for everybody.
I really strenuously object to us changing the rules for a single individual to bring livestock into our neighborhoods. There's a reason we move into these neighborhoods and move out of the country, and it isn't to have a goat next door. I agree. I'm sure they're wonderful, but they may also bite a little kid's hand, because that's what goats do. That's the way goats are. I'm sorry. But regardless, I just think we're really setting a bad precedent when we go for one individual to change the rules.
Kid hand biting, flower eating, running around, defecating everywhere. It's just so funny to me.
Yeah. All right. And Robert Lee. You know, these things are pretty small. You know, I've seen them. I've petted them before. You know, we have dogs in the community. They wreak havoc. They crawl under fences. They get off their leash. They run out of the house. They run all over the place. You know, I don't think that people are going to just run out and buy a goat because they can tomorrow. But you're not going to see that many.
So Robert Leake is in favor. Doesn't think you have to worry about the slippery poo slope. Ed Spears, a city manager.
Mayor, while you're voting, just so you know, if it is approved, you will have two more opportunities, first reading and second reading, to review this item. And the city attorney did confirm that Nigerian dwarf goats do not have rights in the United States of America.
Boy. I stand corrected.
Okay.
So we did some research and we discovered that they do not have them. That's great. So they go ahead and have the vote. How do you think it's going to turn out? The goat vote's coming. We're going to vote on whether to allow two miniature Nigerian goats per household in the residential areas of the city of Milton. 437-1620. I'm getting all these texts. They're hilarious. BLM, Lives Matter. Oh, that's particularly relevant as we're 5 years in, right, on the whole issue. A minimum lot size with goats just means that there's more places for them to spread their poo. Somebody says, what about a miniature Andrew McKay? You're kind of small. What's your lot size, Andrew? Oh, that's true. I already come in at miniature. That's right. So
already?
I'm getting to text in. Somebody says, come visit Milton.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Oh, man. Why not just let them pay the fine? The family gets fined. They keep the goat. They move on. So just live in illegality, living in violation of the law, flouting the authorities, as it were. Okay, 437-1620. So then what did they wind up doing? John, do you have your guess? What's the guess?
Oh, we're going to allow it, and I'm getting some.
The votes in favor were Councilman Cusack, Councilman Leake, and Councilman Powers. The nay votes were Councilman McKee, Councilwoman Fretwell, Councilwoman Farrow, and Councilman Hawthorne. Did I get that right?
No to goats. 3-4, the motion fails. As one person
looking forward to that.
One person texted me and said, City of Milton, goat-free since 1844. Oh, I think you need to put that on the sign. Absolutely. Come to Milton. City on the Blackwater. The city where goat living flows. Or doesn't, because of the vote. 723, I'm Andrew McKay.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
At different times in our lives, we all have problems. Health problems, financial problems, relationship problems. But at no point are any of these problems our biggest problem. The biggest problem facing mankind is the sin problem. When Jesus came to the earth, he didn't solve everyone's health troubles, although he did help a few. He didn't solve everyone's financial trouble, although he did provide food for some. He didn't solve everyone's relationship problems, although a few were helped in that way. But when Jesus came to the earth, he did solve the problem of sin for everyone. He died a substitutionary death in your place and in mine. All we have to do is call upon him for salvation. Jesus is the greatest problem solver in human history.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
It's spring at Anderson Subaru, the perfect time to refresh your ride. With 3.9% for 63 months on 2025 Subaru Outback models, or get 3.9% for 48 months on 2025 Forester models and 2025 Crosstrek models. At Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Subaru for you, Subaru for you, Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Friday night, don't miss the Grand Fiesta Parade in downtown Pensacola. Don't miss the crews, high school bands, the King, Queen, and their court. The fun rolls at 7. The Fiesta Boat Parade is Saturday beginning at 1. The best place to catch the colorful parade from land will be from Sanders Beach, Corinne Jones Center, or Plaza de Luna downtown. Find more events and submit yours at newsradio923.com.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknight 7 to 10, before WEAR TV News, on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Somebody texted in, the Nays had it.
Now that was really good.
Well, probably not, because the miniature horses would have been on the sidelines hoping to get the goats in so that eventually they get the miniature horses in. Yeah, you know, it's just going to open the gate, you know, a little bit. All right, John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. If you don't know what we're talking about, I'm not going to catch you up now, but you can go back and listen to the podcast. newsradio923.com. Milton was considering allowing miniature goats to accommodate one family that brought their baby goats, which is actually, I'm sure, a very serious issue for them. But it does make for a lot of humorous fodder for us, you know, because, I mean, they'll lose their pets or they're going to have to move out of the city, which is not a pleasant thing for them to think about. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Still rolling accident-free, not seeing any accidents on the big board right now. But if you're traveling on I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29 and even past the Highway 29 exit, you're going to see about a 7 to 10 minute delay there just due to construction and congestion. And let's see here. Other than that, you're looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Almost 50 people were hurt after a van plowed into a crowd celebrating a soccer championship in England yesterday. David Kitchen, the head of service for the Northwest Ambulance Service in Liverpool, says four of the people who were injured were children.
27 patients in total were taken to hospital by ambulance, and we believe two of those, including one of the children, have sustained serious injuries.
And the incident occurred during a victory parade marking Liverpool's Premier League soccer title. Police say a 53-year-old British man was arrested, but terrorism is not suspected in the case. The FBI now reportedly looking into a number of unsolved cases, Andrew, including cocaine found in the White House. The Bureau also focusing on the leaking of the Supreme Court Dobbs case that overturned Roe v. Wade and the pipe bombs found before the Capitol riot in January of 2021.
All right.
I already did that story. I don't know how that got in there twice. Copy-paste error on my part.
It happens.
I got another one. The Texas Senate now getting a bill that would keep local governments from holding gun buyback programs. Senators there gave their preliminary approval this week. Their debate is centered on efforts in recent legislative sessions to curb the power of city councils, which are often run by Democrats.
Interesting. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 437-1620, 437-1620. Oh, have you seen this? This is such an unusual story to me. There's a new trend among Gen Z workers. They're calling it conscious unbossing. Have you heard this, John? Conscious unbossing?
Never in my life.
Yeah, so conscious unbossing is that the Gen Z workers don't want to be managers. They don't want to have authority. They don't want to have, you know...
Responsibility.
Yeah, yeah. They want to go to work, do their job, and go home. Which, anybody who's ever worked in a salary position understands that, you know. But the problem then is what happens when the bosses age out and you don't have bosses to replace them, or, you know, the mid-levels become high levels and there are no low and mid-levels to replace them. So Gen Z is like, well, I don't know, that's not my problem to figure out. I'm not a manager. So 69% of Gen Z say middle management is too high stress, low reward. 36% of those surveyed said they expect life will have to eventually become a manager, that they will eventually have to become a manager. And 16% said they're adamant they will avoid middle management altogether. So what they're looking at instead is, I guess, is that they're trying to create more collaborative workplace groups where people kind of self-manage and work together and share the talking stick and play the tambourine. I don't know, ride scooters and you know, tight jeans. And I'm not really sure what all of this does, but you know, the worry is they feel like they get exploited as workers and they don't want to be the exploiter as managers. But good for them.
I'm Gianna Gelosi. From the Dobbs decision leak to cocaine in the White House, the FBI announcing they plan to reopen several investigations from the Biden administration.
FBI Deputy Director made this announcement on X. There are three cases that he says the agency is looking into. The D.C. pipe bombing investigation, the cocaine discovery at the Biden administration's White House, and the leak of the Supreme Court Dobbs case.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. It's not clear when the FBI will have an update on those investigations. Louisiana officials say three more escaped inmates have been captured.
Police say Lenton Van Buren was found in Baton Rouge sitting on a bench near a department store after someone called in an anonymous tip. The other two, Jermaine Donald and Leo Tate, were captured in Walker County, Texas, more than 300 miles from the jail they escaped from.
Fox's Todd Pyro, two inmates remain on the run. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 82 degrees in Pensacola. Beautiful morning. Of course, we'll get a full look at our weather forecast with Brooke Richardson here in just a few minutes. There could be a big change coming to the University of West Florida today. The Board of Trustees is meeting to accept the resignation of President Dr. Martha Saunders. They'll also be naming an interim president, State Education Commissioner Manny Diaz Jr. Last week, he said he was open to being the leader of the university.
That's a decision for the board to make. And if they were to call, I'd obviously be willing to have a conversation with them about that. But that's up to the Board of Trustees of the University of West Florida.
And that from a press conference last week that he held with State Attorney General James Uthmeyer. Former UWF President Dr. Judith Bentz said she believes Diaz will not only get the interim job, but eventually be named permanent president. She's also anticipating some big changes at that university. Local project could be delayed again. News Radio's Chris Bryan with this report.
Santa Rosa taxpayers could be facing financial impacts brought on by Eglin's delay in doing repair work. This is over at the Holly Landfill. The situation is this. The county needs approval for HDR Engineering to be allowed to get onto the site and then remediate the final cover system to bring the closure into compliance with DEP regulations. Eglin continues to slow the process down. Now, that project was planned to be completed by January 31st. Now, it will not be finalized until December 31st. Chris Bryan, News Radio 92.3.
Thank you very much, Chris. A new commercial center named Trinity Wilds Commercial Center has been proposed for Beulah. The PNJ reporting that that project is located at 9200 Mobile Highway on a 4-acre undeveloped site near Nine Mile Urban Market. Plans include one standalone fast food restaurant and a multi-tenant building, which would house another restaurant and also a liquor store. As of Monday, the project has not been scheduled for review by Escambia County's Development Review Committee. Well, 11 people hurt after a boat explosion in Broward County. That happened yesterday afternoon in Fort Lauderdale. Fire rescue there says the boat exploded as it was anchored on a sandbar on the Intracoastal Waterway. 13 people were on board the boat at the time. 9 adults and 2 kids were thrown overboard. 10 people were taken to a burn unit in Miami. 8 adults are said to be in good condition. The 2 kids in fair condition. Right now, there's no word on what killed or caused that explosion. Governor DeSantis commenting on Memorial Day yesterday. He posted on X about Memorial Day, saying it is up to us to secure our liberty by producing leaders who are willing to make great sacrifices on behalf of others. The governor said, quote, God bless the memory of those who gave the last full measure of devotion in service to the United States of America. It's 7:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. Brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Call them today for all your commercial and premium landscaping needs. Still rolling accident-free. Good news on that. If you're on I-10 eastbound through that construction zone, it's right around Highway 29. You're going to see about a 5 to 7 minute delay in that area. Also, not seeing any other delay. Well, yes, if you're approaching the Garcon Point Bridge on 98 westbound, you will see some delays just due to congestion right there. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much. John, now our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We do have a chance of rain today, 40% chance of a pop-up shower or thunderstorm, high near 85 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 72. For Wednesday, 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 84. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 73. Keeping a 40% chance of rain on that Thursday with a high near 80 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you, Brooke. 82 in Pensacola, 79 in Gulf Breeze, 78 in Milton. Your next news at 8 o'clock and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
As she stared at me through the window, I realized the time we spent in the backyard on her trailer just wasn't fulfilling. We used to have so much fun on the water. I just couldn't crank her up. But Key Marine did. Fun days on the bay are back. Woo! And my Yamaha outboard runs better than ever.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. Key Marine, your Yamaha outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola. Google Key Marine or find them on Facebook.
Why do you love your favorite pair of jeans? What keeps you connected to your oldest friends? How do you know that the solution you seek is right for you? The answer is simple. It's the fit. And at Pinair Credit Union, we believe your finances should fit you perfectly. It's the right checking account for how you spend your time and money. It's the right loan for where you are and where you're headed next. It's local banking that's as comfortable as your favorite pair of jeans. Join us at Pinair.org. You'll fit right in. Pinair Credit Union is insured by NCUA Equal Opportunity Lender.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out.
I love that you still chuckle when this music comes on.
I'm not used to it.
Yeah, I love it. Well, because, I mean, I've been interviewing you for 11 years, I think, as long as we've been here. Yeah, a long time. Off and on, depending on your various roles. And, you know, we've had this music for you for a long time. And not this music. This is the new music. So, Sheriff Simmons, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
I do have a suspicious mind. So, yeah.
Well, that's natural. That's what you're supposed to have, right? I mean, I think so. All right. So, lots of events to cover that have happened, which is kind of unfortunate. But, you know, there it is. We had a drive-by shooting on Devane Street like 4 days ago.
Yeah, this past Saturday. We got a report that a car pulled up and fired. They heard one round
and then they went outside and they found that there were a bullet hole, I think, in her travel trailer. But I don't anyone know what was hit.
Okay. Well, that's
we're still looking for
still a little bit discouraging.
That might be responsible for that.
You don't want to have that happen. I also had a little bit more involved shooting on Saturday at the 850 studio, or not, it's not studio, 850 bar. It's close to, it's kind of funny, the WEAR report said by Cat Country. I'm like, I mean, it is, but it isn't. It wasn't in our parking lot. So what happened here? This is an officer-involved shooting, right?
Yeah, it is an officer-involved shooting. So there's limited things I can tell you because we're not doing the investigation. FDLE is. But we were out there on an unrelated disturbance.
We talk about some things that we take for granted. I just want to, there's people tuning in all the time that have never heard this before. The sheriff's office does not investigate its own shooting. Well, you do, but
we
also
can.
You have outside agencies and FDLE, Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Any officer-involved shooting, they're gonna do an investigation.
Right. That's the agreement that we have in
right.
this circuit. We can investigate our own shooting. I trust our investigators to do
sure.
it right. And then there's because the state attorney's office reviews them anyway. So that is the second review of it. But it's better and cleaner if we just ask an agency that is not the sheriff's office to look at the shooting. They don't say it's right or it's wrong. What they'll do is they'll investigate and then present that to the state attorney's office.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we obviously help them out. So in cases where an officer-involved shooting takes place, then again, FDLE handles it. And while I give some details, there's some things that I don't want to keep comment on. If we ask someone to come and investigate, it's really not cool for me to just
get out there and keep talking about the case,
yeah,
right?
And give my opinions about it. But if, in many cases, there are some obvious, you know, the NAS shooting, those things.
Right.
But I get out there and talk a lot about those types of things.
So in this case, this was late at night at the parking lot outside the A50.
Yeah, we had a couple of deputies that are on the scene working an unrelated disturbance.
Okay.
When some people came up to our deputies and said, hey, there's a fight around back, which is still the parking lot area, but around the back. And as they were saying that, our deputies hear a number of gunshots. Clearly, our deputies do what brave deputies do. They run towards the threat. And at one point, an individual, the suspect, was running towards the deputy with a handgun. You know, confronted the deputy. The deputy was forced to fire, and then the suspect went down. So we're not sure which bullets hit the suspect, to be honest, whether it was the deputy's bullets or whether it was the shooting that was taking place before the deputies rounded that corner.
Okay.
So that's part of the investigation. There were several shell casings that were not ours. So we know and we heard that there was a disturbance involving gunfire before we even got there.
And you always, as a matter of policy, put an officer involved in a shooting on administrative detail until FDLE comes forward and there's no charges? I mean,
well, we put them on paid administrative leave, but and only until we review it ourselves.
Until you guys come forward. Okay.
Yeah, we don't wait until the FDLE comes back with it.
Got it.
But what we'll do is we'll look at the situation. And many times we have the body cameras,
right.
We have in-car cameras, we have statements. We know, you know, it's pretty clear cut. And then
plus,
I would assume
the bar has video too. I mean, on the outside,
yeah, clearly
we're looking at any
video that we can get there. Because again, there's two different shooting incidents that took place in
right.
this thing. So technically, we're working the initial shooting, and then the Florida Department of Law Enforcement is reviewing the officer involved part of it.
Okay, and I mean, from the accounts that you've given or that we've heard, other news, Channel 3 has given, I mean, it seems like a fairly clear case. But you know, that's why you do the review, just to make sure. Let's see. 7:42 on News Radio 92.3. What else do we? Oh, this is kind of a good news note. You had a guy sworn in from Erie, Pennsylvania Police Department, Patrick Baer. Now,
yeah.
I thought this was kind of because, you know, a lot of law enforcement agencies in the country, you know, 5 years after George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, defund the police, which itself came after, of course, Ferguson, which, you know, made it harder for all law enforcement agencies in a variety of ways. But, you know, this is us getting from somewhere else because we're a law enforcement friendly community, right?
Well, I think that there's a lot of things, a lot of reasons that people would come to Escambia County to live. The weather, the climate, and if you're a law enforcement officer, we're a very supportive community and gracious community. We typically will recruit locally. I'm a fan of Escambia, Santa Rosa, you know, the area, kids that can come to work at the sheriff's office.
Yeah.
Because our support systems here, their families here. We also have a large military presence here. So people get out of the military and they decide, hey, I want to live in this area. And we obviously love getting military veterans on the sheriff's office workforce. So, but in this case, someone saw what they liked in the Escambia County Sheriff's Office. We're very proud of that. And so he got certified, and he'll start work shortly.
Very good. Well, we'll take it. And, you know,
we'll take it.
You, Sheriff Johnson, both talk about people coming here from elsewhere in California and Illinois and New York. And, you know, hey, we're glad to have – we feel sorry for the communities that lose their police because of, you know, bad politics, basically. But we'll take them. You know, we will find a place for them.
Community.
Yeah, absolutely. People here like me, and they say thank you, and they buy me donuts and stuff. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of the thing. There was a report, I think NorthEscambia.com had this story, that there was about 15 or 20 mailboxes in Molino destroyed over the weekend.
You know, every couple months, really, we'll have a report that an individual got their mailbox tore up. It's not as common as it used to be. I remember growing up, oftentimes you'd see, you know,
Hillbilly baseball
cars that will drive by and take care of mailboxes. I think the mailboxes are, a lot of them are concrete now and bricks, and a little difficult. And plus, there's so many cameras around now.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's why. But we did get a report. Several were done in Molino, so we're going to look into it, and we would encourage the kids. I'm assuming it's kids. I can't imagine a family of four going out and doing that sort of thing. But
a family that destroys mailboxes together stays together.
Yeah, so no, I'm assuming there's some kids and school's out and that sort of thing. I'm just wondering if that's who's doing it.
I would say I would also allow for some wiggle room in the perpetrator category to include the dummies who never grew up category. It may be driving around thinking this is entertaining as adults, because. As a bicyclist, I have encountered some of these people, I will say. And anyway, I'll just leave it at that. Yeah. We're talking to Chip Simmons, Sheriff Chip Simmons. John Pickens, that's Traffic on the Five. John?
No accidents to report to you right now, but if you're on I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29, again, expect about a 7 to 10 minute delay through that construction zone. I'm John Pickens with your Traffic on the Five.
Thanks so much, John. We also had you've got your year-to-date narcotics results, right?
Yeah, it happened on my phone. It has some of the year-to-date from just our narcotics unit itself. And this is as of the end of April. And I can tell you that we have seized, we've served 30 search warrants. That's pretty good for one unit for a four-month time period. We have made 33 arrests in that period of time. Here's an important thing. We've seized 38 weapons, 38 guns, a couple of cars, and let's see here, the fentanyl is what I'm looking at because that's a priority. 2,666.8 grams of fentanyl, a bunch of other drugs.
2,000 grams of fentanyl? That's 2 kilos of fentanyl.
That is our narcotics unit and our wow. agency overall prioritizing fentanyl investigations, these distributors, and we're doing search warrants, kicking doors, and seizing a lot of guns, arresting quite a few people, and seizing a lot of fentanyl.
Now, I know EMS is usually going to get the call, but are you seeing a lot of overdoses still from fentanyl-related use, either intentional or not intentional fentanyl use?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We get called quite a bit. We don't get a call to all of them because if they, strange way to say it, but if they survive, then oftentimes we don't get a call on those. But on death investigations, we handle the death investigations that are not attended by a physician.
Okay, and it's just sometimes we hear a lot about it, sometimes we don't hear as much about it, but it is still very much a real problem.
We get several calls a day, I would say, on overdose, potential overdoses and overdoses, and a lot of times they just need medical attention to recover. Sometimes they're not quite out of it. They're just on the verge.
You know, EMS has been doing this, what is the name of the program? CORE. They've been doing this CORE program now for about 2 years in Escambia County. Seems like to me a great success. If it saves five people, it saves five people. Also, it de-stresses the resource use because they're not taking up ambulances again and again, because many times it's multiple, you know, one person has multiple overdoses. Are you seeing, can you just, you know, either anecdotally or just from your perspective, do you see any impact from CORE on your side of the equation?
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, we wouldn't have the statistics
okay,
that they would
fair
have.
Enough.
I salute the effort.
Yeah.
I think that people are doing something, and I think you have to take a multi-pronged approach to these types of things. We're doing our part. They're obviously doing their part, and then you're doing a little bit extra. So I applaud that they're stepping out and doing something a little differently, but you'd have to ask them about the statistics.
Okay.
I can simply tell you that the number of calls for service that we get anecdotally on individuals that are on fentanyl or overdosing on fentanyl or fentanyl deaths doesn't seem to be going down. It's still fentanyl is still very high. much a high priority for us. It's still the most dangerous drug that I've seen in my time in law enforcement, and it's still something that we pay great attention to.
I did want to ask you about something that's it's outside of your domain, but I know it's something you care about. You were a football coach for a long time. You've been involved in youth mentoring. Of course, you have the Blazer Academy, both for women and men. You care a lot about that because, A, you know that people who don't get proper upbringing become criminals, and B, you care about kids a lot. And, you know, the decision that was made by City Council last Thursday to approve the Rafferty Center, the $3 million building that's going to expand the Southern Youth Sports Association. Again, it's not your domain, but I know you have a perspective, and I was just curious if you want to comment on the value either of the organization or of the activity or of getting people, you know, kids from being on the street to being in sports and the value of that to them as, you know, as a form of socializing, as a form of benefiting them.
Yeah, I can tell you that my interaction with Southern Sports Youth Association and the coaches that they have some wonderful mentors and some wonderful coaches. About 2 weeks ago, I was at Pensacola State College, and I walked into their gymnasium, and there was a basketball league going on there. One of the coaches, I approached him, Raymond Palmer. Actually went to school with him. So for years we had coached against each other, and he's still at it. He epitomizes what they're doing to me. He epitomizes what they're doing at SYSA, because a lot of times it's football, a lot of times basketball, but all the time it's mentorship. Mm-hmm. All the time it's taking that time to be with these kids and to give them something to do, and they'll listen. You know, the whole basis for our Blazer Academy is both the men and the women's Blazer Academy, is that. That coaching aspect of things where they'll sit there and they'll listen to you and you can give them those little bits of knowledge and give them some hope and some, you know, some encouragement, but you can also give them ear and hear what they have to say. So I salute it. I love the fact that there's private funds going into it. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact as a former park president that you have to have a contract where you have exclusive use of the facility, or you can't have a league. You can't say we're going to practice on Monday, and then someone else goes in there Monday, and then or games are on Saturday, and you put literally thousands of dollars into this thing, and then someone else is on the field.
Right.
So you have to have a contract with the county that allows you the use of that, and then or the county, the city, in this particular case. So, I'm a fan of the time. Year after year after year that they've put into this thing, and I salute them, and I'm glad things are going well for them.
Yeah, and I just know you and I get a chance to talk about Blazer Academy a lot, mm-hmm. and this is one of those things that maybe doesn't get talked about a lot, but clearly, based on what was said at City Council on Thursday and what we know from the community and the number of people and all this, that, you know, what CISA is doing is, I mean, just really, really great work for these kids, and it's good for the community, and I like taking a moment to celebrate even what other people are doing, which is, you know, that's very important. I did want to ask you, we're now 5 years post George Floyd. Obviously, that itself came in the context of being post Ferguson. We had protests here in Pensacola, you know, to some degree. But, you know, and you and I talked about this at the time quite a bit. But, you know, your thoughts about I talked with Tommy, I know about a lot about it when he was chief of police. I don't think you were maybe in law enforcement at the time. You had maybe were not yet elected. I can't remember if that was true. But just 5 years later, your thought of where Escambia Sheriff's Office is and where the nation is with regards to the race issue and policing.
Well, I think my thoughts are that you've got to do things in a professional manner. No matter what you're doing, whether it's any type of work or law enforcement specifically, you've got to be open. You got to be transparent. You got to be honest. And I think that we've shown when I ran on engagement enforcement, but I also ran on transparency. One of the first things I did, body cameras. I want people to know, hey, this is what's really going on. This is the job that the law enforcement is doing. But I also make sure that people understand that we are not perfect. This is a very, very difficult job. We talked about a shooting, officer involved shooting. A deputy's running into what he knows is gunfire. He runs into that and he's confronted by a man with a gun. Or what we call a suspect with a gun. So these are difficult choices, split-second choices that law enforcement has to make. With the proper training, with the proper emphasis on professionalism, I think that there's a relationship with a community that a law enforcement agency can share and make our community that much better. So do we learn from some things that have happened, not just in Escambia County, but other places? I know that there were some things that they were asking for, that people were asking for nationwide, that we were already doing.
Yeah.
you know, there was, I can't remember now, it was 10 for 10 or 20 for 20, whatever the number was. But we had already had those policies in place. We already had the transparency. We were already open and honest about these things. Well, I'm not saying that everyone will agree with everything that we do, or there's probably listeners now that don't agree with everything that I say. But the bottom line is, if we're all looking to make our county better, it starts with me, at least. It starts with a law enforcement agency and a government and elected officials that are accountable to the people and they are willing to come out here and talk to you.
Yep.
And talk to other people and go to meetings and say, this is where we are. This is our thought process, and this is why we did this. And I think that's what people want. People want to know that you have their best interests at heart.
And I think, you know, for a lot of folks, the George Floyd incident is very tied to race, even as I asked the question. But it's also tied very heavily to mental health for police officers. And are they comfortable saying, you know, I'm feeling stressed? Are they getting counseling when they need it? Are they getting interventions as they need it and support as they need it? And also, and which a lot of that has reformed quite a bit in the intervening 5 years, but also, are people, other law enforcement officers, comfortable telling them, hey, you're doing something wrong, or stopping them? And even law enforcement officers themselves, you can find yourself sort of iron-jawed, locked into a response that's a mistake. Can you recognize it's a mistake? Can you back yourself down? Can you de-escalate yourself? I mean, these are all questions that you guys deal with and train on. And, you know, it's not only race. It's all these other dimensions of what that very vivid video, unfortunately, you know, brought to life for us. Sheriff Simmons, I always appreciate the time, appreciate the input, and, you know, keeping us safe and always being a better agency every day. I appreciate it. So we'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.
John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10 eastbound between right around Highway 29. You're going to see some delays in there, about a 5-minute delay, but it's through that construction zone. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hi, this is Curtis Stone. Now, I've cooked a lot of food in my day. Steaks, salads, pasta, seafood, chicken, soup, sandwiches. I mean, you name it, and I've prepared it thousands of times. But even I can't cook enough to feed all of the 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger. That's one out of every five children. Now, luckily, there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last one of those hungry kids. The only problem is getting it to them. That's where the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks comes in. They gather up surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across the country. We call them food angels, and you can be a food angel too. Come on, earn your wings by supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
It's always Sonny's here. This is Eldon with Sonny's Barbecue. When you're ready for slow smoke barbecue prepared by local pitmasters since 1968, it's always Sonny's. Visit us at four convenient locations in the News Radio area: Pine Forest, Navy Boulevard, 9th Avenue, and in Pace on Highway 90. With $10 big deals and all-you-can-eat ribs for only $19.99 every day. Kids eat free every Saturday, and don't forget that good old banana pudding, all served with a heaping portion of Southern hospitality. Open daily at 10:45. And remember, it's always Sonny's here.
I know you wanna leave me, but I refuse to let you go.
Ain't Too Proud is a celebration that brings the audience to its feet.
Ain't Too Proud to bear, ain't too knowing.
The Grammy-winning songs, the Tony-winning moves.
Ain't Too Proud to prove.
Ain't Too Proud, the life and times of the Temptations. June 4th and 5th, Pensacola Sanger Theater. On sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Stream us online at newsradio923.com or download the News Radio Pensacola app.
Right now, we are all in very real danger.
Danger? Ha! I walk on the wild side. I laugh in the face of danger.
Good morning, 7:58, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. An aid group backed by the U.S. and Israel now delivering food into Gaza, where 500,000 people are facing starvation after a year and a half of war. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation says they've now started delivering truckloads of food into the region, but they didn't say where or when. The UN and other groups have refused to work with the group, arguing that its plans weaponize aid and contradict humanitarian principles. The almost 50 people hurt after a van drove through a crowd in England. The crowd was gathered celebrating Liverpool's Premier Soccer League win over the weekend. And the manhunt continues for a former Arkansas police chief that escaped from prison over the weekend, Grant Hardin. He broke out of the Calico Rock prison Sunday while wearing a makeshift law enforcement uniform, apparently. So the manhunt is on there.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, puts in limitations on access to areas within the Pentagon where journalists used to be able to go unaccompanied. Now they have to have accompaniment, like to his office. Listen on it.